You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to an episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as always, are my fabulous co-hosts,
Tristan Riddell and
Lori Sears.
All right. We are in the next in line of our series on the Voyager aliens. And this week we are talking about those evil hunting Herojin, because that's all they want to do is hunt you and take you for their trophy.
The Delta Quadrant version of Predator.
Yes. Yeah, very good comparison. Yes, that is exactly what we are talking about today. So buckle in and let's talk about these guys. As always, why don't we just kick it off with our first impressions? So Tristan, when you were watching season four, and we came on to Message in a Bottle, Hunters and Prey, kind of that trilogy. I consider it a trilogy. I'd like to watch these three back to back to back because they have really good continuity between them. So as you're watching this part of the Voyager series for the first time, what are you thinking about these guys?
Now, Message in a Bottle was before Hunters, right?
It was right before.
Yeah, that's when we got a glimpse of them, but we didn't really get to see them in action. It was just like over
right.
The view screen, right?
It was the forewarning.
It was the forewarning. That's right. I like that. I feel like they could have done that maybe a couple episodes before and tease instead of just one episode before. But hey, a tease is a tease and let's take it.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. I didn't know if we were going to see them again. And when I saw it in Message in a Bottle, I was like, well, I hope we do. Just because, I mean, they didn't look like the casual random alien that you normally see in Star Trek.
Yes.
And we all know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't even need to describe it.
The forehead of the week is how it's typically described if we're going to describe it.
But when Hunters came around, I really enjoyed that episode, and I really liked that we got a tasting of their culture and of the hunting culture, and we saw the trophies on the wall, the whole enzyme thing. And these people were so much bigger. Like, they were big actors to begin with, but they were also shooting them at, like, very, you know, high angles and low angles. And and so just the sheer fact of how they tied up Seven and Tuvok was like, okay, this is not just handcuffs. Like, these people know how to tie people up. Like, that's like it's their job. And the whole painting thing, I was just enamored by them right off the bat. I was like, wow, we get a rich culture right off the bat and right at the beginning. And it's like not slow going where we're like, oh, we get to find out a little bit more of them as we go on, which you always do. But it's like, bam, no, this is different. This is cool. So I was excited when I saw it.
Lori, what about you?
Well, I would agree with what you said, Tristan. And it was funny because there's so many people that I know that have like deer heads on the wall and fish on the wall. And I thought if they would have left all this stuff on those bones, it would have been like any dude that I know that lives in South Georgia. So yeah.
They're trophies.
Yeah, that was very... I felt very familiar with these guys. And like you said, like I saw that on Memory Alpha that, was it Brandon Braga and Brian Fuller had been watching the NFL. And Brandon Braga said, let's make some big aliens. And I thought that was really funny. Did you think, now when you were talking about size, did they keep them that big the whole time? Like every time they were on there? Because it seemed like they got shorter.
They definitely got shorter.
Yeah. Shorter and smaller.
Yeah.
Actors are pretty well known for being smaller people.
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever you meet someone who's famous and you like because of like my job, I've met a lot of people who are in the public eye, and it's always so surprising how small they are. Like it's just,
what's with that?
I don't know. Like my theory is that like people who are usually, this is such a bullcrap theory, but it's the only thing I can think of.
Is, fire away.
I'm gonna get so much flack for this, but like people who are smaller, and I'm a smaller guy. Like I'm only 5'9" and like 100-something pounds. But the thing is that people who are smaller and who could possibly get picked on more because of their size or because of their stature probably move more towards the arts, like music and drama and things like that, and performance. And so that's just kind of my theory, is that a lot of smaller individuals go towards theater and music because it's a way for them to shine, and it doesn't matter what size they are.
That makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's just my theory. You know, take it however you want. But yeah, with Orochin, they said that they wanted to cast people who were 6'6 or 6'7, no one under.
Yeah.
But that really limits your choices. Like, I have a brother-in-law who's 6'7, and I very rarely see anybody else that height. And to find someone who's talented enough is hard enough.
Yeah, yeah. You really do have to hire linebackers or NBA players.
Yeah, you do. So when I saw them later, I just told myself, okay, self, they took those suits off, so they're just regular size without those big armored suits. So that made sense to me, and I just kind of went beyond. But I thought they were really a great alien enemy, and because they seemed almost indestructible. It was just,
yeah,
they were scary. They were really scary.
They were definitely one of those enemies where we knew Voyager is in for a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. With these, yes, guys, they're not going to be able to brush them off quickly. We're in for a fight, and we got it.
And they basically became like what Worf was to TNG, they became to Voyager, and I'll explain that. Whenever someone could beat up Worf, that's when you knew it was serious business.
Yes,
and
yes.
Whenever you saw a Hirogen scared or beat up or hurt, that's when you realize, oh, crap, what's around the corner? And that's how we got Species 8472.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It was. I thought it was a nice progression and a nice way to kind of show badasses, but then, you know, segue into something that was even cooler.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of Klingons, as I was preparing this week, I rewatched some stuff, some episodes with the Hirogen in them, and I kind of realized, you know what? The Hirogen are kind of like the Klingons of the Delta Quadrant. Their whole mentality, their whole culture is rich with this idea of the hunt, and all of their pride depends on their trophies and the fight, and it's got to be a good fight. It can't just be some wimp that they slaughter in no time flat. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a challenge in the fight, and it kind of reminded me of the Klingons and how for the longest time, for one thing, okay, there's the whole honor thing and going out with glory, but then also the Klingons in Star Trek VI, or rather up to Star Trek VI, were basically just bullying their way with whoever they chose until Praxis exploded, and they had to change because they would have just rendered themselves extinct had they not changed their way of life just a little bit to accommodate that massive loss. They couldn't keep making just an endless supply of torpedoes. They had to find a different way to live. And then we saw later on with the Hirogen what they were doing with the holotechnology that Voyager gave them, to try, I guess, and alleviate the fact that they were hunting themselves to extinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty fair comparison. I mean, out of all of the quote-unquote bad guys or alien species in Voyager, Alpha Quadrant species that they most resemble have to be the Klingons, absolutely. I can't think of any other race. I mean, they're definitely not Romulans, definitely not Cardassians. I mean, it's... Yeah. Definitely the most similarities are between those two species.
Right. And they are also larger than humans, definitely stronger, and very alien. One thing that I really liked about the Hirogen when we first saw them was, as you said, Tristan, it's not just the stupid little piece of on the forehead or the nose that you see every week. This is a very elaborate makeup job, and you know that they're going to be important because they wouldn't go to all this trouble if they're just going to stick around for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Why definitely would they bother with that?
What did I read that they modeled the makeup after? like it was some sort of iguana monster or something like that. Like I honestly can't remember. Yeah, it was something to that effect, like some sort of lizard or some sort of iguana, you know.
Yes, they are lizard-like. They are the evolved salamander babies that Janeway and Paris are flying on that planet. This is what they became, you guys. Oh my god. And actually, no, because we learned that the Herosian had a very elaborate culture going back millennia. But anyway.
what would you say your guys' favorite parts of the, like, not favorite episodes, but favorite parts of their culture or their costume or themselves? What was your favorite part of the Herosian?
I like that they were really ritualistic. I don't know. That reminded me a lot of, like, in a way, maybe the way that the American Indians would get ready to go on a hunt or whatever you've seen in a movie. Like, I've never actually seen that live in person.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, they would put the war paint on and then, you know, they would kind of mentally prepare themselves for what they were getting ready to do. And they were so wrapped up in what they were getting ready to do. And I guess that's very, I can't wrap my mind around something like that. Like, I'm not into martial arts or any sort of anything like that. So that's impressive to me that someone is that dedicated to what they're doing.
I would say mine is just in the fact that they did actually take the time to develop this very rich culture centered around the hunt. They have these trophies. And Lori, like you mentioned earlier, I mean, I've definitely gone into other people's houses and they've got deer, moose, buffalo, whatever that they've hunted. And it's kind of this big piece of pride that they have stuffed forever. Mm-hmm. And I am absolutely not into that culture at all, despite growing up in Wyoming. But I was surrounded by a lot of people who were.
Yeah.
And so I get it via proxy. That makes a lot of sense to a lot of people, and the fact that these bad guys are so focused on the hunt, and they do take it so very seriously. This is their lives. Mm-hmm. This is all their cultures. This is the most important thing to them. Yeah, it made for a very, very powerful and intriguing villain, because you knew it was going to be tough meeting them.
Oh, yeah.
So I was looking forward to that as we got to know these people.
And Lori, I think I'm with you. Like, when you said the word ritual and ritualistic, I think that struck a chord with me where I really enjoyed that with them. And for some reason, just like the whole paint on the helmet, like with like if it's two stripes of white or one stripe of red or on the left or on the right, I just love that that could mean different things and that they actually put it on their helmet instead of their face. I don't know why, I just love that. I love the ritual of it. I love that we're not told what it means, but it like the more senior guy, he put on two stripes of white, and the novice junior, you know, he put on one red. So maybe that's kind of like their version of pips, you know. So
yeah, it could be, right? Yeah, but there's obviously a significance there, right? So some thought went into that.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the thing. That's what I love. We don't need to know every little thing. All we need to do is see it and know that it has meaning, but we don't necessarily need a detailed description and a pamphlet to understand it.
Right. Yeah. Amen to that.
I feel like we're getting that more and more in cinema and in TV. Everything's getting so dang literal that nothing is left to the imagination. Everything needs to be explained and spoon-fed. And I love when Star Trek does this, where it explains some of the science to us, sometimes overly so, but a lot of stuff is left to our imagination. And like, we know that we're smart. Like, Star Trek knows that we're smart and that we get stuff. And like, there was one time I was walking out of Benjamin Button, and I love that movie, and they got, like, I hear these kids behind me, they're like, whatever, it was stupid. I mean, they didn't even explain why he was aging backwards. I was like, what does it matter? You totally missed the point. It doesn't matter why. It's what matters is that we were with them along for the journey, just like with these guys. It doesn't matter why they're so into hunting. It just matters that it is what they do, and we're along with them.
That's right. That's how their culture developed. Deal with it, because Voyager did. We're along for the ride. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. There are many things I do not understand, and I don't have to understand. It is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't necessarily like everything being spoon-fed either. I think there is a nice little air of mystery when you have to figure things out for yourself, and oh, heaven forbid, if you have to use your brain. Some things that are, I don't know, some things are meant to be direct. I don't think entertainment should be one of them.
Well, I feel like, I don't know, I'm with you. Like, I don't like entertainment that's direct and spoon-fed, but the thing is, I think it has its place. Like, anything that's on the USA Network, I can't watch. because, in my personal opinion, it's just bullcrap. It's like watching NCIS. You know, like, it doesn't matter which episode you watch, because they're all the same, and you can watch them out of order, because, you know, there's a big difference between, like, Breaking Bad and Suits. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, and so I feel like if you just want to shut your brain off and you just want some random TV, yeah, put on a show like that. But if you actually want to think and be entertained by using your brain, then yeah, watch something with an arc or something that actually has some intelligence.
Watch Star Trek.
Watch Star Trek. There you go. There you go. That is the Trek FM motto right there.
Yeah, it should be. That just needs to be our slogan. Watch Star Trek.
Just plain and simple. Watch Star Trek.
There we go. And that is pretty direct. So direct has its place, too. You just have to use it appropriately. Okay, so we've talked about what we do like about the Hirogen. Now let's talk about the flip side, things that we didn't like. So, Lori, was there anything that you didn't like about these guys?
You know, I was thinking about that previously. I mean, I don't know. It's really weird to say that I can't find flaw in something because I'm, like, naturally critical. But, no, honestly, I really cannot think of anything that would make them a bad villain. To me, I can't think of anything that really makes them a bad, uninteresting character. So, sorry, I'm drawing a blank here, man.
It's all good. Tristan, what have you got?
Well, I'm with Lori. I'm trying to think. I mean, overall, I really like them, and I felt like we saw them the right amount. They were not overexposed, and I don't think they were underexposed. The only thing that's really coming to mind, and this may be a contradiction with what I said earlier, like, you know, with Species 8472, they got their butt kicks by them, and, you know, got, like, literally torn to shreds. But I felt like after that, we saw them get their butt kicked a little bit too much. Like, we set them up to be really badass in Hunters, and then all of a sudden in Prey, they get torn to shreds, and then in the Killing, like, in the Killing Game, they get defeated. And then in the the episode where with the in Flesh and Blood, they get defeated as well. Now, granted, I wanted them to get defeated in Killing Game, and we'll talk about that later. But I just felt like they were really, really great and really strong. And then all of a sudden, we only see them win once, and not even then, because Tuvok and Seven got away. So it, like, we'd never see them have a victory except for when we first saw them, and then after that, they kept losing.
It's sort of like using the Borg too much. You know, you want to have a big, powerful villain, but our guys, the good guys, our heroes, have to find a way to win every week.
Right.
Some way.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I can compare it to the Borg in overusing them, because the Borg, I think, were overused in Voyager. But in the sense of how often can you show these big bads when you know that they're going to win? I mean, the Voyager crew is going to win. At least in TNG, they had, like, a standstill where nobody won, or they got a bloody nose but went away. Like, even Picard would run away if there were too many Romulans.
I guess what I'm saying is, had they used him even more, they would have really gotten soft, and we would just know that it was a crock.
Right.
Sort of like by the time we get to Endgame, we know who's going to come out on top. This has happened how many times before? More than I've got fingers at this point. And I have all 10. So
yeah, I feel like in Killing Game, like, I feel like maybe 90% of the time we see them pretty strong and pretty BA, and then the last 10% Voyager crew wins. So I guess I'm okay with that. It's like the slow progression of them getting, you know, beaten down.
Yeah, you got to beat them down just a little bit so Voyager can win.
Well, you made me think. I want to think about Killing Game. The thing that really, I guess the one thing that irritated me about them is that it seemed like the people who are in charge were so bullheaded. They wouldn't listen to anybody else. And then there's some, I mean, the one guy that was in charge and killing him, they didn't like what he was saying, so blam, you're dead. And then that other guy who was such a jerk. I mean, he wouldn't listen to anybody. Let's do this. Let's try this. No, it's my way or the highway. I mean, I don't know. That was rather annoying, I suppose. But I think that's the hierarchy situation that they have in their culture. It's like, I'm the alpha. You have to listen to me. I don't care what you think. So,
right. Yeah. That's why I kind of excused it, because I also thought it made for good conflict, and good conflict makes for good storytelling. So
sure.
I can understand, Lori, how that would be annoying. Absolutely. Like, when they continually don't listen or just like, oh, geez, come on. You know, like, let's get some progression.
Yeah.
But it also kind of, you know, talks to their character a little bit. So I could see it both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me wonder what the Hirogen would be like in the Mirror Universe, because as you guys know, in the Mirror Universe, if you want to get to a higher rank, you have to kill somebody who has a higher position than you to move up. Well, with the Hirogen constantly hunting and all that, would they be extinct a long, long, like, much longer time ago?
There'd be nobody left.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm wondering right now.
Oh, I can think of something else that bothered me. We see no Hirogen women whatsoever.
Oh, yes. Thank you. This is a point I wanted to make. We do not see a Hirogen woman once, which makes me wonder, what are they doing?
Yeah, what are they doing? Like,
are they back
nomadic
at home in the kitchen raising the kids?
But how can they if they're nomadic? Do they have a home
That's
base?
That's right. It's set. Yeah, they're nomadic. They don't have a home
Are they
world.
Out fighting too? Why is this just a bunch of dudes?
Yeah, if they were truly nomadic, they would take their families with them.
You would think. But we don't see them.
They have to have some sort of rally point where, like, it's either like a main group that has string groups that go out and then come back after a couple of months or a year. Or, like, and you have to have several of those, and that's the only way that I can think of. And also, what's the deal? Okay, this is a highly positive show towards women. We got a woman captain. We got strong. Every single female on the ship is a strong woman. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, we've seen no Kazon women except in the first episode in the far background. Mm-hmm. No female Hirogen. No female Krennim except for the wife at the very end. No female, the guy who says Prax. Oh, what's that race called?
Prax!
There weren't any ladies there either. What is with Delta Quadrant aliens sending out the guys to represent? What are the ladies doing, man?
I hate to think
they're all just sitting on the homeworld knitting and sipping coffee.
Yeah, it's eating bonbons, writing letters, and
watching soap operas.
Maybe
singing songs.
Yeah, maybe the writers thought the Borg Queen was enough. That was going to just suffice.
The network is like, okay, calm down, everyone. We're giving you a Borg Queen and a female captain. That's enough progress for this century.
That's enough to shift the balance of power. Now lay off. No, but actually, that really did bother me. When I was just watching episodes today, I just thought, we don't see any of them. There's not a whole lot of talk about them.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, there's one mention. And it's just, like, the guy in Killing Game says, like, yeah, women will want me because I totally am an awesome hunter.
Nice.
Right. And I don't know. It's kind of strange because if you're a Hirogen woman and you're, I guess, I'm assuming that they raise the children because the men are out in the hunt. You have to raise your children to be hunters as well, right?
Right.
So where are they getting their skills from if they're not out hunting?
The only way I can think of is that maybe they are similar to the Spartans, where everything, like, about the Spartan culture, everything was focused around being a warrior, about fighting. From the moment they were born, if they were, you know, if they were deformed or weakly, they would kill them. They would kill the babies, and the women would raise them. But once they got to an age where they could hold a spear or a sword, it was their father's job or other, like, you know, male family members to raise them as a warrior. So all I can think of is maybe the older Hirogen who actually made it, like the women raised them, and then the older men or men who aren't out on their own hunt help them become hunters and then take them out for their own hunt, because in Tsunkatsu we hear them talk about, I took my son out on his first hunt. So there's got to be, it's got to be like, okay, once you're old enough, I'll take you out on your hunt and I'll take you away from your mother. That's all I can think of.
I think you're right, Tristan. There's got to be some kind of rite of passage like that, which kind of halfway answers the question as to what the women are doing. They're grooming their kids.
Mm-hmm.
to go out on that first hunt. And then after that, what? Are they useless? They go into the workforce doing book work?
I don't know. Maybe that goes under the category of not being spoon-fed everything. So.
That's true. Although this is a mystery I'd like to know just one teeny thing about.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we would have just seen a couple, female Hirogen, we would know they're out on the hunt. They're on the ship.
There you go.
Yeah, it'd be great.
But I guess it's even harder to find 6'6" tall women than it is 6'6" men. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Wouldn't it be hysterical if the women were like 3'5"?
Oh my gosh.
we never saw them because they were below the camera frame. Like
that would be so strange.
That would be strange. We'll never know. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
No. No more. Yeah.
But we've talked about Killing Game. We've talked about Flesh and Blood, Tsunkatsu, Prey.
Yeah. These are some good episodes.
Yeah. These are really great episodes. And we get some really great moments out of this.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got to ask you guys now, favorite Hirogen episodes. What are they?
Killing Game.
Mm-hmm.
That's mine. Well,
by far.
That's it. It's Killing Game. It's just so much fun. It is as good of a two-parter as you could possibly have to follow up Year of Hell.
Mm-hmm. We get Hirogen dressed as Nazis in France. Come on.
There you go.
What more do you want, people?
You can't get much cooler than an alien in a Nazi uniform. I mean, although we do see an Enterprise.
Well, yeah, at that point it gets a little tiresome, but at this point, it's cool.
And we see Janeway in that weird white suit.
Oh, we've discussed this, haven't we? You don't like the suit, right?
I thought it was overly mannish, but she was based on...
But she was rocking it.
She really was.
That character or that outfit was based on an actual person or a person from an old World War II movie. I can't
really
remember.
I think it's from a movie, actually, but I
don't
know.
You think it's from a movie? Okay.
I don't know the name of the movie.
Anyone who's listening, like, if you know what we're talking about, send us an email or let us know on Twitter, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, please write in and let us know, and we will mention it on the show.
But what do you guys like about The Killing Game? Because I can go on and on.
I would say, while we're on this subject, I loved the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic from the way they did up Jeri Ryan and her getup, with just the look of her hair, to the red lipstick as the lounge singer, to a pregnant B'Elanna, where Roxanne doesn't have to hide her stomach for the one and only time
while
she was pregnant on the show.
Yeah, that was funny.
And then I like Janeway's hairdos. I mean, it's very, 1940s.
It was cool.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I like seeing the guys in their camo getup. I mean, it's all good. I like it all.
Oh, yeah.
We also get to hear Tom speak in 1940s soldier vernacular.
Yes, he does.
What does he say? Something like, "What's the matter, sister? The war's almost over."
Yes, indeed. Oh. So much fun. So I definitely enjoyed that aspect, and I mean, it's a great story. It's awesome. It's kind of an outthinking them kind of a story.
Yes.
And you know what? The best part is drunk Neelix with Klingons. Let's bring it back to the Klingons.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I knew that would be your favorite moment.
It is! That is the time when I love Neelix the most.
There's no other greater foe than hunger. So awesome. And we get to see Janeway as a Klingon, too. We get to see a lot of people as a Klingon.
Yeah, it's all mixed up. It's fantastic. And Perry gets beaten up. Well, I mean, ritually, as he usually is, but he's... I mean, he's got a bloody lip the whole time.
He kind of gets to be the hero a little bit, though. I kind of like that.
He does.
That was cool.
Yeah. So he's the whipping boy.
He gets smacked in the face. Yeah.
And he gets to save the day. I mean, what more does Harry want?
And he stares a 6'7" Hirogen down and says, "Go to hell." We have a lot of great moments, and the structure is so fantastic because out of all the people who they would, make stay behind and fix a ship, like, I could only think of B'Elanna or Harry, but I thought Harry was a great choice.
Absolutely.
He's wily.
Yeah, and he's just turning the whole ship into a big holo program, which had to have been a heck of a lot of work. So he's just totally stressed out. And I thought Garrett Wong, actually, he did a great job portraying Harry in that episode. It was good stuff.
We should have talked about this episode when we did the Harry episode. Like, this was a good
moment. We really should have, right? Oh, missed opportunity. But we may have to come back to that in the future because we are running out of time for this week, guys.
Yes,
we
got
to wrap things up. So before we officially go, though, I have to mention an iTunes reviewer because we got a new one this week.
Hallelujah! Right.
Many thanks to The Mike Jones Life for your 5-star iTunes review. We agree that Voyager did, you could say arguably, have the best Star Trek captain. I mean, not that that's going to spawn any controversy, right? None at all. Not among Trek fans. No. So for all of you out there, if you want to be among the cool kids like this guy, you leave us a 5-star iTunes review. We will mention you on the show and give you a shout. And so if you haven't done that yet, what are you waiting for? Go out there and do it right now as soon as you turn this thing off.
And also, if you want to talk to us, there are so many different ways that you can talk to us. You can go to trek.fm/forums, and then that way you can talk with not only us, but anyone who's a member of the forum site. You can email us by going to trek.fm/contact, and from there you'll have a drop-down menu, select To the Journey, and you can talk to us about anything you want. Give us show ideas, tell us we're doing a great job, whatever you want, and we will talk about it behind the scenes or sometimes on air. And also, you can talk to us on Twitter. I'm the Insane Robin. Lori is LoriS68. And we have All the Profanity with Charlene Schmidt over here. This is all the ways that you can contact us. So give us no excuse for saying you couldn't find us.
Also, don't forget to visit our sponsor, TrekFan.org. Next week, we've got a really cool idea. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about how we would envision our lives if we had them on Voyager. So this brings up so many possibilities already in my mind. I can't wait to discuss them, but
I know,
we got to wait a week, guys.
We got to wait a week, but it's going to be fun because I've been thinking about this one and I got some answers. So.
Me too. So I think we're all looking forward to that. Until then, you guys, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!